from WNYC Studios. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Tuesday, March 12th. We begin today with our climate story of the week, which we do every Tuesday on the show. And this week, we're leading with it for a closer look at the climate section in President Biden's State of the Union address. And because energy and the climate are already breaking out as one of the biggest and most divisive issues in the presidential election campaign. Remember this remark from Donald Trump just a few weeks ago when Sean Hannity asked him in an interview if he'd act like a dictator?
We love this guy. He says, "You're not going to be a dictator, are you?" I said, no, other than day one. We're closing the border and we're drilling. After that, I'm not a dictator, okay?
So make no mistake, promising more fossil fuels is one of the top ways that Trump thinks he'll get reelected. And at least one big thing will be different this time, even after day one, if Trump does get back into the White House, unlike during his first term, when few people expected him to actually get elected. There is now a detailed pro-fossil fuels policy agenda called Project 2025, developed at a conservative think tank, prepared specifically so that Trump, if elected this year, can move specifically and quickly to roll back the climate policies the country has today. What would they be rolling back? Well, here is the climate section from Biden's State of the Union speech last Thursday night. This runs about a minute.
We're also making history by confronting the climate crisis, not denying it. I don't think any of you think there's no longer a climate crisis. At least I hope you don't. I'm taking the most significant action ever on climate in the history of the world. I'm cutting our carbon emissions in half by 2030, creating tens of thousands of clean energy jobs like the IBEW workers building and installing 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. Conserving 30% of America's lands and waters by 2030. And taking action on environmental justice fence line communities smothered by the legacy of pollution. And patterned after the Peace Corps and America Corps, I launched the Climate Corps to put 20,000 young people to work in the forefront of our clean energy future. I'll triple that number in a decade.
So there's President Biden, the climate section of the State of the Union. I want you to replay that for part of our climate story of the week this week, because it was other things about the State of the Union that got all the attention so far, right? With us now as our climate story of the week guest, journalist Scott Waldman, who covers energy and the environment for Politico, including their specialty energy and environment publication called E&E News. Scott, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Let's begin on those Biden lines from the State of the Union and his climate record and plans for a second term. And then later we'll get to Trump and Project 25 and that blueprint with that title that the Heritage Foundation think tank has waiting for him. One obvious thing from the State of the Union there, Biden joked at the beginning of the clip, "I don't think any of you think there's no longer a climate crisis. At least I hope you don't." But if someone polled the congressional Republicans in the Capitol there for the speech on the phrase, "There is a climate crisis facing humanity," how does your reporting suggest that that would poll?
Oh, well, certainly most of them deny the reality of climate science that shows us that, you know, humans are heating the planet at an unprecedented pace through the burning of fossil fuels. I will, as someone who's covered Congress for years, I will say there is another undercurrent among the Republicans, which is that they do acknowledge the reality of climate science and global warming, but they don't have any sort of plans that would adequately address it. So on the one hand, they're saying, yeah, it's real. But then on the other hand, they're saying, you know, we should increase natural gas drilling because it's, you know, less carbon intensive than burning coal.
Right. Uh-huh. So saying that climate change, man-made climate change even, is real, but then not endorsing policies that would significantly address it. All right, we'll get back to the Republicans. But on Biden, he said in the State of the Union clip that he's cutting carbon emissions in half by 2030. Can you explain that in a little more detail? And half compared to what?
Compared to 2005 levels. I mean, this is... he's right to say it's one of the most aggressive plans in I guess, world history. But there's a number of ways he's going to go about it. He's going to basically cut carbon emissions from power plants and vehicles, trucks. That's a key plank of it. Those are the primary sources of carbon pollution in the country. Some of those plans are just rolling out now. And then, you know, he passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which was a massive package of incentives and spending for clean energy. So the administration is dramatically ramping up clean energy. We're seeing factories, a boom in factories being built throughout the country, including in a lot of red states where a lot of these new components for solar panels or wind turbines and the like are being built, electric vehicle batteries. So there really is a dramatic explosion, you know, in particular on electric vehicles where the rate of, you know, where the number of vehicles sold every year is just increasing, you know, by double digits. So we're at this pivotal moment. And, you know, it's obviously going to shift a lot if Biden loses his election, because it, you know, 4 more years of these policies in place will get us really far down the road of EV adoption and also expanded solar and wind. In Trump's first term, he really went after wind in particular and made it just harder to build offshore wind turbines throughout the country.
Now, you referred to, referred to this briefly at the beginning of that answer, but that other line that Biden stated there, that he's taking the most significant action ever on climate in the history of the world. Those were his exact words. And obviously, that's a big claim. Do you know if climate scientists see it that way? The most significant climate action ever in the history of the world, which suggests a comparison with all other countries, not just in U.S. history. Is the U.S. now the most aggressive country on Earth in terms of climate change prevention policy?
I don't know that I'd go that far. I mean, you have countries like Costa Rica where they've run on almost entirely on renewable energy in some days in the past few years. But certainly in U.S. history, and of course it's notable since we're one of the biggest polluters in the world. So dealing with our carbon pollution is, you know, primary to the world's chances at fighting climate change. But nonetheless, what they achieved in the Inflation Reduction Act really will, according to scientists and outside analysts who study, you know, energy, is that it really will get us pretty far towards that goal of cutting emissions in half by 2030. You know, I think beyond that, you start to have more challenges with the electrical grid and getting from 50% to 100%. You know, it's going to take many years, but nonetheless, what's happening right now is massive. And, you know, of course, Biden wanted to even this to happen on an even grander scale, but Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, really cut through the heart of Biden's climate plan, and they passed a reduced version. Nonetheless, he's right to say, he's right to brag about it, to say, you know, this is one of the most aggressive, certainly in U.S. history, maybe not throughout the world.
Our guest is Scott Waldman, energy and environment reporter for Politico. We've been talking mostly about Biden so far. Here is Trump from during the 2020 presidential campaign, when wildfires in California were happening big time and making headlines, and Trump was president. And he said in this BBC interview that the world would start getting cooler and that science doesn't know. Here's that clip.
It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
Trump in 2020, explicit climate change denial, and here we are again. But this time, there's a full-fledged pro-fossil fuels policy blueprint waiting for him called Project 2025, developed by the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. Scott, you've done detailed reporting on this, and we'll get into some of the details. But in general terms first, what is Project 2025?
So Project 2025 it's organized by the Heritage Foundation, one of the dominant conservative think tanks in Washington, going all the way back to the Reagan administration. It's also basically takes input from about 100 top conservative organizations throughout the country. A lot of the chapters were written by former Trump officials who are expected to return to the administration. And it's a 900-page document that lays out basically the conservative movement's proposal to make Trumpism, to institutionalize Trumpism, if you will, in every part of the government. It's certainly worth reading, though, yes, it is 900 pages, but it's I think some readers would find it quite shocking in what it proposes.
So, for example, your headline on an article about Project 2025 includes the quote, reversed and scrubbed, reversed and scrubbed. What do those words refer to?
Well, they're talking about climate science, where they want to basically just root it out from every part of the government and the way it's used. So I actually have a story coming out soon that's just looking at how that is happening, how they are proposing that should happen with the military. They want the military to basically blind itself to climate science. And the way the military uses climate science, including in the Trump administration, is to help prepare for military installations around the world to be more resilient to all the effects of climate change, including wildfires, heat, rising sea levels, extreme flooding, etc. And then also to prepare troops for warmer conditions, more deadly heat waves, how to operate there. It also, you know, the military has used climate science to propose and look at ideas for how to cut down its fossil fuel consumption. It's one of the largest fossil fuel consumers in the world. Another example, national security, is what to do about the Arctic, where thawing or melting sea ice and thawing ice is opening up, navigation channels that weren't there before. Russia and China have already for years been taking advantage of this and dramatically increased their expansion in the region, while we certainly have not. So without climate science sort of giving the timeline to the military for what to expect in 10, 20 years, they can't really adequately prepare for it. That's just one example. Then also, you know, science is used by the Environmental Protection Agency to craft regulations, to look at, you know, for instance, the fossil fuel emissions or the carbon emissions from cars that burn fossil fuels and how to handle that. You know, climate science points the way to air pollution and the cost of that. So they really want to target basically the information that tells us how to act on climate, when to act on climate, and how serious it's going to be. And it's not just through any agency. It's really throughout the entire federal government. And not only that, they want to fire the people that work on it.
So it's unwinding climate considerations from all aspects of federal policy or across many, many, many federal agencies, where that's one of the things that they're supposed to do now is take climate impacts into account before they propagate policies, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And here's another example. It's in places you don't even expect it. The Postal Service. What to do about the rising heat levels and number, an increasing number of postal workers who are operating in extreme heat situations like in the Pacific Northwest in the last few years, and especially in the Southwest. There's been increasing number of deaths of those postal workers or severe injury as a result of just simply delivering the mail. Oh. So the Postal Service also is using climate to prepare for, you know, the public health of its employees.
I see Project 2025 would also abolish the role of presidential climate advisor, the role that John Kerry has held for President Biden, and replace it with something called environment and energy coordinator. Now, having an energy and environment coordinator doesn't sound bad on its face. You write for a Politico publication called Energy and Environment News, and they are related with real trade-offs between them. So what does it mean in the context of Project 2025's political agenda that they would abolish presidential climate advisor and replace it with energy and environment coordinator?
Well, you know, yes, it may sound nice on its face, but what that basically means, you know, when it comes to the environment, Trump has never shown any sign of caring for the environment, nor has anyone in his administration. So that word is sort of tacked on there. But what it basically means is that someone would operate out of a White House and sort of be a liaison, if you will, to the fossil fuel industry, where if there was a slow permit because the environmental impact of a project was being studied, which is required under law, you know, that coordinator could sort of just, you know, clear the way for that project to be approved without the necessary permitting. They can also hear from the concerns of the industry and, you know, what it needs to expand and make more money and react to that and use the levers of the federal government to benefit private industry and these large mega multi-billion dollar corporations like Exxon.
Do you know whose money is behind the Project 2025 agenda? Is it companies like Exxon or the fossil fuel industry associations per se?
Not directly, but, you know, a lot of the ways that these companies interact with the federal government is through interest groups like, you know, the American Petroleum Institute and other groups that are out there lobbying for fossil fuels. It sort of gives Exxon or Shell or BP, you know, a distance from those, from the direct actions that, you know, helps them when it comes to public perception. But a lot of the support, I've just actually started digging into that. A lot of the money behind this project is from places that people haven't even heard of. You know, there's a series of conservative foundations out there founded by industrialists, sometimes who died decades ago, that have just spent years pushing against regulations, fighting against regulations. There's climate denier groups like the Heartland Institute that are, you know, seek to confuse the public when it comes to climate science. They've had some input into Project 2025. They've been founded for years, funded for years by the Mercer Family Foundation. The Mercers are a very wealthy family that were major Trump donors in his first run for president. So, you know, they're sort of the quiet lever behind this. Leonard Leo, probably a name very familiar to your listeners by now. You know, he's got a series of groups that are funding these 100 conservative organizations that have had input into Project 2025. So chasing the money around and figuring out where it comes from is always a challenge. But, you know, we can see some familiar fingerprints in the groups that are pushing these policies. And obviously, I should, of course, mention the Koch brothers, or the remaining Koch brother, who are also funding some of these groups.
And who was funding Nikki Haley's presidential campaign, but from what I read is no longer, and kind of caving to the inevitability of Trump. Not that Trump doesn't carry the Koch family essential concern, which is, as you say, energy interests. One other thing, just kind of based on today's news and how I think it's going to relate to the campaign around climate, we have a report out from the government this morning that inflation kept pace, or I should say inflation stayed above 3% annual rate last month. And that's a little worse than people were hoping. And Biden's climate bill is called the Inflation Reduction Act. And he makes the case about how this is going to make green energy cheaper for a lot of people with the subsidies for electric vehicles and things like that. And that's why it fits under the Inflation Reduction Act. The Republicans, I think, have been making the case when inflation rises to near the top of voters' concerns, as it often does, that one of the big ways that they're going to fight inflation is drill, baby, drill, because Biden policies are making the fossil fuels that we still use to power our cars, power our homes, heat things, et cetera, to a large degree. Biden's policies are making them more expensive. So drill, baby, drill. We'll have more fossil fuels. Energy prices will go down. I think that's central, from what I've been hearing, to Republicans' anti-inflation policy campaign platforms. I'm curious if you've been hearing that too, and can compare and contrast the reality of the claims from each side.
Well, I mean, it's certainly worth noting that, you know, gas prices, energy prices are a primary driver of inflation, and that's been a tricky area for Democrats to, you know, run on when they're talking about climate policy. And the other side is talking about, no, we want to make your gas prices cheaper so that you don't pay so much at the pump. You know, Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, had a plan to keep gas under $2, which I don't think the fossil fuel industry would love, since they would lose a lot of money if that were the situation. He never really got into that whole aspect.
And of course, if we're just talking about gasoline prices, they are significantly down in the last year, even as the Inflation Reduction Act has begun to be implemented.
That's right. And it's also, as I said before, Biden has had record levels of oil and gas production. They are beating Trump right now when it comes to oil and gas production in this country. And one of the interesting things about this campaign, I do cover politics. I write about the campaign frequently. One of the interesting parts of this campaign is that Biden has not mentioned that on the campaign trail at all. He talks about all of his climate plans, and understandably, he needs to do that to win over the left. But he does have a powerful message against Trump, which is that he is putting forward the most aggressive climate plans in history, but he's also keeping gas prices down with record levels of oil and gas production. So it's not true that Biden is, you know, driving gas prices up. I think that's been long a line used by the fossil fuel industry and Republicans against Democrats for a very long time, that, you know, if you do climate policy, you're going to have really expensive energy prices. And that, you know, Biden is proving that's not necessarily the case, and it's not the case at all.
Scott Waldman covers energy and the environment for Politico, and that's our climate story of the week. Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.